When all else fails, and you know that you've got a subset of your population that has some defect of some sort, some proportion or susceptibility that would lead to failure, then a screening may be appropriate. Now, it can be on a component before you assemble it, if it's suitable, or you could push it back upstream, or sometimes it's on your product itself. And it's usually expensive and hopefully avoidable. And yet, when worse comes to worse, and you know that 10% of this 1,000 units that you've got assembled, that in sending out 10% defective units is unacceptable, well, then a screen is probably appropriate. Screen is similar in concept to burn-in. Now, burn-in has got a wider brand of definitions, I would say, in that it grew out of the early electronics industry, where the early digital circuits and first I wouldn't call them ASICs by any means. They weren't CPUs by any means, but the early junctions and the early transistors and some of the early logic circuits and so on that were assembled had a relatively high defect rate. And for early failures, the ability to fabricate the components was still a pretty new business, and getting it right and being able to detect and prevent problems from getting built into those circuits was very difficult. And so a relatively common technique, and because many of those failure mechanisms would be excited by elevated temperature, the concept of burn-in came about. And so you take your final product or a subsystem of your product and put it in some chambers, elevate the temperature, and run it for sometimes up to a month. But oftentimes it would take a week or so, or maybe a couple of days. But the idea was is to find the ones that had those latent defects or the damage or the anomalies in them, such that you could then do the repair or replacement and find and ship only the better units, only the good units. Well, today, the need to do burn-in on electronics is gone away by and large. Now, it used to be a routine test and done all the time. If you're in an organization that just does burn-in because you've always done burn-in, well, it's time to really take a look at the data and find out whether it's a complete waste of time, which I suspect, or is it actually providing value for you? So the basic concept for burn-in, get my pen up here, is, and this is a probability density function, so it's commonly, you could think of it as a histogram, and I'm looking for failures. Now, in general, burn-in has been used to get rid of infant mortality or early life failures. So if I have a decreasing failure rate, over time, the bulk of my unit failures will be early in the production process or early in the relative life of a product. And what's been found is that if I run this for the equivalent of, say, 3 months, so I might use some kind of acceleration or so on and run a test at elevated temperature for a couple of days, that these failures can be eliminated from the units we ship. So instead of an average failure rate up here, we reduce it to down here. So we have this net increase in our, or decrease in our failure rate as the customers would see them. Ideally, you would take the testing out to here, but it becomes a balance. Is this marginal increase in defects detected worth the additional time and expense of actually running the test? So it's one of the trade-offs that comes into play. Now, if you take a look at a probability density function for a product that goes out until it finally wears and fails, it will have a finite probability of failing right from time zero. And then at some point, something's going to wear out. And intermittently, there's going to be accidents or various different defects or abuses that occur that cause failures. But by and large, if the product is designed well and should last for 10 years, then the bulk of my failures might occur sometime after 10 years. At least that's what everybody is hoping for. And unfortunately, sometimes we get a batch of products or a batch of systems or an assembly error or something that creates this probability of failures early on. And it might be a small percentage of the overall population, but the net effect is that it looks like a decreasing failure rate for some point in time, and then eventually it increases, the classic bathtub curve. So if you've got some reason or evidence to suspect that you have a unique failure mechanism that affects some portion of your products, you're going to see this decreasing failure rate in your field data or other early life data. But in fact, you might have two populations, a unique population that's creating these early failures and the rest of the failure mechanisms that affect your product over time. So the idea is to find out what this failure mechanism is and design an appropriate stress to ferret them out, make them reveal themselves. And so sometimes it could be a careful analysis of your functional data, but sometimes you need to apply some stress to cause these things to occur. And what you don't want to do is shorten the life of the rest of your products by the amount of testing you do to get these. And so this is where it becomes pretty much an engineering challenge, is to, one, identify the failure mechanism and identify how to accelerate it such that you don't damage the rest of the population. And that's typically what burn-in and the concept is all about, is finding those early failure mechanisms or failure mechanisms that cause early failures and weed them out of the program. Now, burn-in is typically done with running the product and running it under some stress, typically temperature. But the stress should be applied such that it excites the failure mechanism that causes the early failures. It doesn't have to be temperature. It could very well be something else. Now, a similar way to do stresses, only it's got a few advantages, is something we call HASS, Highly Accelerated Stress Screening. And there's also HASA, which is Highly Accelerated Stress Audit. And so some of it, this HASS is this sampling, and HASA is 100%. The basic idea is very, very similar to the burn-in concept just explained, except now I'm building on the HALT test experience. So previously in the program, or if we're planning on doing a HASS style of screen, then we would run a HALT test and find out where those margins are. So on a particular product, it might have an operating range of temperatures like that, and our upper limit and lower limit for temperature, lower operating limit and upper operating limit are discovered as defining where our margin is. And we know that if we operate at that temperature, the product is very likely to fail in and about that at some location. And likely there's some distribution around that as to where it'll actually fail. But we know we've got some margin. And so the idea with HASS is that with the many or the few or however many stresses were applied in the HALT testing, is look for the ones that had the least margin. And it might be more than one stress that applies to find a range of different defects. Typically, for electronics, we use temperature and vibration because it excites a wide range of defects that come about because of poor manufacturing processes or variability in component manufacturing. But for whatever product, is determine which ones have the least margin and then set a criteria that, say, a stress that's partway up towards your destruct limit. The idea is to pick a stress that isn't likely to overly damage your overall good products while still being strong enough to cause the weaker products or the ones with latent defects to reveal themselves. Now, the advantage of doing temperature and vibration on electronics is you could run the test for 4 hours and it'd be equivalent to a much longer burn-in test with a static, modest temperature increase. And so it might be temperature and vibration, or it might be temperature and humidity. It might be vibration and voltage margining. It could be a variety of different steps that go into defining the one or many stress levels that you would use then to execute a very aggressive screen that would then you need to verify that it's not overly damaging your products. And that's what we call a proof of concept. And the basic idea is that you run the HASS screen that you design 20 times on the same product. So it goes through the cycle of, say, temperature cycling, high temperature exposure, and vibration. And it runs that profile maybe for 3 or 4 hours. And then you do it again. Make sure the product's working. Run the test again. And do it 20 times. The idea is that you shouldn't have any failures, or at most one failure in that process. And it basically means that if you can run 20 cycles without failure, that you're not causing more than about 5% of shortening of the life of the overall product. So if the overall product is robust and has got the ability to survive at a long enough for your customers at a low enough failure rate, then adding a little bit more damage to the product won't change that end result dramatically. But it will help you find those manufacturing escapes, manufacturing latent defects, variations in supply chain, vendor errors in assembling their components, all of those kinds of things. And that may have the overall net effect of reducing your overall failure rate, and especially the early failure rate is where it tends to be very, very effective. So HASS has got a little bit more work to setting it up, but it is much quicker, so that your volume, or the number amount of inventory tied up in testing, is significantly reduced because the test is much, much shorter than a typical burn-in. Another whole branch of the screening process is environmental stress screening. So it's a variant of burn-in and a variant of HASS, but it's typically looking at the early life failures, but it's also looking at monitoring for variation in your process that would have adversely affect its performance under one or more of the various environmental stresses that your product will see. And in this case, again, it can be single or combined stress like a HASS, but it also is generally set up on those elements in your product development testing that tended to have the least margin. Now, in product testing, we'll probably have, I'm going to use temperature again, some specification of where we need the product to operate. And as we tested the units, we found that there was some amount of variation. I'll just put a little distribution in there as to how well the products performed at various temperatures. But the stress level, let's use that as the stress. We expect some level of stress, but we find the product has some strength. It's the ones that are close, it has the very small margin there, versus the ones that have a very large margin, that are the ones that we want to monitor and measure. And it might be a combination of looking at variability or looking at the effects of aging or whatever. But the basic idea is that as the product strength either shifts or spreads out, the effect is that we're going to end up with some failures. And so by monitoring this on the, whether it's temperature or humidity or vibration or a simulation of a transport system or storage conditions or whatever it is, these are often based on standards that define different stresses and stress levels for different sets of conditions and different environments. But by running your products through these, or some subset of your products through these, you can detect changes in your product's performance because of different things that change in your supply chain or as the materials age. And it allows us to avert, hopefully, any significant number of defective products making it to the field. Now, they're typically done with modest stress. And you could say that they overlap to some extent with burn-in or with HASS. And I would say that's true. But if you're looking strictly at environmental conditions, then it's probably appropriate to call it an environmental stress screen. If you're building off of a HALT test and the results of HALT defining the operating limits, then you're probably technically defining a HASS or HASA. It's a style screen. And if you are working off of an old standard, one of the old mill standards that literally says burn-in testing, well, then you are doing a burn-in test, and there's no doubt about it. But there's plenty of organizations and people I've run into that use these terms nearly interchangeably. So read the questions carefully and understand that these things are very similar to each other. Right. Here's a kind of a rhetorical question or thought to you, for you is, instead of doing the screening, how about we just avoid it altogether? This testing in quality or ferreting out failures after the fact is really, really expensive. And you have to ask, is it really necessary? And every situation will vary and change. And so keep in mind that it's one of the tools we have, but it's a distasteful tool, in my opinion, this burn-in and screening. So one of the things we have to deal with in testing is sometimes the products are just, we can't measure time to failure, but we can measure whether it's failed or not. And in that case, we have attribute data.